clearing in the yard. He made short work of the log, feeling a little self-conscious with Anna's dark eyes fixed upon him as he chopped. Before the heartwood could dampen in the rain, he gathered the splintered fragments in his arms and dashed back to the doorway, where Anna stood aside to let him pass.
"It's no palace," he said foolishly, though by Hokitika standards it was.
Anna made no comment as she passed under the lintel and into the dim fog of the cottage. Gascoin dropped the kindling on the hearth and reached back to close the door. He lit the paraffin lamp, set it on the table, and knelt to build a fire, intensely aware as he did so of Anna's silent appraisal of the room. It was sparsely furnished. His one fine piece of furniture was a wing-back armchair, upholstered in a thick fabric of pink and yellow stripes. This had been a present to himself upon first taking possession of the place, and it stood pride of place in the centre of the room. Gascoigne wondered what assumption she was forming, what picture was emerging from this scant constellation of his life. The narrow mattress over which his blanket was folded thrice, the miniature of Agathe hanging from a nail above the bedhead, the row of seashells along the windowsill, the tin kettle on the range, his Bible, the pages mostly uncut except for Psalms and the Epistles, the tartan biscuit tin, inside of which he kept his letters from his mother, his papers, and his pens. Beside his bed, the box of broken candles, the wax pieces held together by the string of their wicks.
"You keep a clean house," was all she said. "I live alone."
Gascoigne pointed with a stick to the trunk at the base of his bed.
"Open that."
She loosed the clasps and heaved open the top. He directed her to a swatch of dark linen, which she lifted up, and Agathe's dress slithered out over her knees, the black one, with the tattered collar that he had so despised.
"People will think me an ascetic," she had said cheerfully, "but black is a sober colour. One ought to have a sober dress."
It was to hide the bloodstains, the fine spray that peppered her cuffs. He knew it, but did not say so. He agreed aloud that one ought to have a sober dress.
"Put it on,"
Gascoigne said, watching as Anna smoothed the fabric over her knee. Agathe had been shorter. The hem would have to be let down. Even then the whore would show 3 inches of her ankle, and maybe even the last hoop of her crinoline. It would be awful. But beggars could not be choosers, Gascoigne thought, and Anna was a beggar tonight. He turned back to the fire and shoveled ash. It was the only dress of Agathe's that Gascoigne still possessed. The others, packed in their camphor-smelling cedar case, had been lost when the steamer ran aground. The berths first looted, then flooded, when the steamer fell at last upon her side and the surf closed in. For Gascoigne, the loss was a blessing. He had Agathe's miniature. That was all he wished to keep. He would pay her memory due respect, but he was a young man and still hot-blooded, and he meant to begin again. By the time Anna had changed, the fire was lit. Gascoigne glanced sideways at the dress. It looked just as ill upon her as it had upon his late wife. Anna saw him looking.
"Now I will be able to mourn," she said. "I never had a black dress before."
Gascoigne did not ask her whom she was mourning or how recent the death. He filled the kettle and put it on the range. Aubert Gascoigne preferred to initiate conversation rather than fall in with another person's theme and tempo. He was content to be silent in company until he felt moved to speak. Anna Wetherill, with her whore's intuition, seemed to recognize this aspect of Gascoigne's character. She did not press him to converse, and she did not watch or shadow him as he went about the ordinary business of the evening, lighting candles, refilling his cigarette case, exchanging his muddy boots for indoor shoes. She gathered up the gold-lined dress and conveyed it across the room to spread on Gascoigne's table. It was heavy. The gold had added perhaps 5 pounds to the weight of the fabric, Anna guessed. She tried to calculate the value. The crown would buy pure colour at a rate of around 3 sovereigns per ounce, and there were 16 ounces in a pound of weight, and this was 5 pounds of weight at least. How much did that total? She tried to imagine a column of sums in her mind, but the figures swam. While Gascoigne banked the fire for the evening and spooned tea leaves into a strainer ready to steep, Anna examined her dress. Whoever had hidden the gold there evidently had experience with a needle and thread. Either a woman or a sailor, she thought. They had sewn with care. The gold had been fitted up and down the bones of the corset, sewn into the flounces, and parcelled evenly around the hem. An extra weight she had not noticed earlier, for she often carried lead pellets around the bottom of her crinoline to prevent the garment from blowing upward in the wind. Gascoigne had come up behind her. He took out his bowie knife to cut the corset free, but he began too like a butcher, and Anna made a noise of distress.
"Please," she said. "You don't know how. Please let me."
He hesitated and then passed her the knife and stood back to watch. She worked slowly, wanting to preserve the form and shape of the dress. First she took out the hem, then worked her way upward along each flounce, snicking the threads with the point of the knife and shaking the gold out of the seams. When she reached the corset, she made a little slice beneath each stay, and then reached up with her fingers to loose the gold from where it had been stuffed in panels between the bones. It was these lumpy parcels that had so reminded Gascoigne of chainmail in the jailhouse. The gold, shaken out of the folds, shone gloriously. Anna collected it in the centre of the table. She was careful not to let the dust scatter in the draught. Each time she added another handful of dust or another nugget, she cupped her hands over the pile as if to warm herself upon the shine. Gascoigne watched her. He was frowning. At last she was done, and the dress was emptied.
"Here," she said,
taking up a nugget roughly the size of the last joint of Gascoigne's thumb. She pushed it across the table towards him.
£1, 1 shilling. I haven't forgotten." "I will not touch this gold," said Gascoigne. "Plus payment for the mourning dress," Anna said, flushing.